Word of mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. America in the mid to late 1960s was alive with revolutionary spirit. The civil rights movement, anti-war protests, and the feminist movement, called Women's Lib, challenged traditional notions of race, class, power, gender, and identity. Nationalist movements thrived, most notably the Nation of Islam and the Black Panther Party. Both advocated for racial pride, social justice, and violence, if necessary, to protect African Americans. We hear less about the Young Lords, which aspired to awaken Puerto Rican radicalism in the U.S., even less known, about a third of its members were women. Despite the name, the Young Lords was profoundly shaped by the Latina experience and feminist ideals. And at its peak, Iris Morales was among the leaders. She's now educator, community activist, and attorney, and author of the new book, Through the Eyes of Rebel Women, The Young Lords, 1969 through 1976, and joins us now via Skype. Iris, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thank you very much.
Wow, what a rich life you've had, and I'd love to know more about it. I'm sure listeners would as well, because the Young Lords are not so well known, I mean, even less outside of Chicago or New York. So what was the goal or the work of the organization?
The Young Lords started in Chicago, and we established a chapter in New York. And basically, our goal was to end poverty and racism. And we organized in communities, Puerto Rican communities across the United States, primarily in the Northeast, where the Puerto Rican population was concentrated. We were inspired by the Black Panther Party and by global movements against colonialism that were taking place in Latin America and Africa and Asia. And we believed strongly in the power of the people to transform society for the benefit of the many instead of the few. We were best known, I would say, as grassroots organizers because we mobilized dramatic takeovers of institutions such as the People's Church in East Harlem that we took over to set up free breakfast programs for needy children and free clothing drives. East Harlem at the time was one of the largest Puerto Rican settlements in the United States and also a very poor community. Mm. We also took over Lincoln Hospital in the Bronx. The hospital had been named by the community as a butcher shop, and we demanded quality health care for the poor. It was also the only hospital available to South Bronx residents. So we also organized workers, students, women, and prisoners' rights, and we were primarily first-generation Puerto Ricans born or raised in the United States. There had been no vehicle for Puerto Rican to express the grievances, so the Puerto Rican community gravitated to the organization.
Well, it's a big agenda, a lot of activity in a relatively short amount of years, but you did make a lot of noise, especially those takeovers. I saw a New York Times profile from November of 1970 of you and some of the other women involved in the movement. And it's funny because this article was in the food, fashions, family furnishings section. You know, this is usually something for human interest stories on women. But this was about some radical sounding women and you at 22 saying, we can do anything the brothers do.
Yes, very interesting. That section of the Times was reserved for stories about women, not this kind of story, but we were happy to be included. It was actually the first documentation of the women in the Young Lords in mainstream media. And generally, the contributions of women are ignored or marginalized, so we thought it was important to be included, and it leads to the writing of this book so many decades later, to have the women in the Young Lords included in the historical record.
Well, tell us about that, because especially within all political movements, you know, what often happens, like with the women's movement, there are some people on the vanguard, and then the question becomes, no, well, should female empowerment come first, or should class issues or poverty come first? So how do you decide when women become involved in a movement like the Young Lords what the agenda is?
Well, we believed in the revolution within the revolution. We did not separate our issues from the issues of society as a whole. We believe that in order for the issues of women to be addressed, the entire society had to be transformed. We also saw the intersectionality of issues, so that we can't be Puerto Ricans first and women second. I mean, is my arm a woman and my leg a Puerto Rican, or is my foot poor? So we saw ourselves at the intersection of all of those issues, and we prioritized working with the poorest in our community, men and women. As women, we prioritized organizing among the poorest women. For example, a lot of our health initiatives dealt with issues of the right of women to birth control options, because we understood that raising large families for women without economic means was almost impossible. We also brought to the table the issue of the mass sterilization that was taking place. Initially, we discovered in Puerto Rico, where one third of the Puerto Rican women of childbearing age in 1965 had been sterilized. And this had become part of a government program, and we called it genocide. And in discovering the sterilization that was taking place on women in Puerto Rico, we uncovered the sterilization rates of women in the United States, Puerto Rican women, Black women, Native women, Chicana women, poor white women. And so all of these issues became important to us, and that's how we prioritized it. We really believed that by lifting up the poorest and the most disenfranchised among us, we all benefited.
And we do know, history has revealed, that sterilization was going on, you know, up until the 1970s, legally in the United States, especially for poor women and women of color. But I want to go back to that point you mentioned. You said a revolution within a revolution. That's a term that Fidel Castro used in Cuba. Can you tell us about how that played out, especially when confronting a very traditionally machismo culture among Puerto Rican men?
Well, we did get the phrase revolution within the revolution from a speech that Fidel Castro made, where he credited the Cuban women for the progress of that nation. And of course, we lived in a patriarchal society exacerbated by machismo within the Young Lords, with women of color at the bottom rung of that society. And these ideas of male superiority were perpetuated in the organization. So in the early days, we were treated as mindless bodies, and we were expected to handle the administrative tasks, the cooking, and to play the supportive and submissive roles. Facing the situation, we decided to form a women's caucus, and under this banner of the revolution with the revolution, seeking to change the organization. We appealed to the men. We were not in the majority, so we had to appeal to the men. We got support from the most progressive men within the organization. There was a concept in the organization that had found its way into the 13-point program, which said, we believe in revolutionary machismo. And we said, how can machismo be revolutionary? That's like saying revolutionary racism. How can racism be revolutionary? So I think that acknowledging and recognizing machismo as an oppressive force, just as racism was an oppressive force, and having a commitment. We can't imagine a society today and call it progressive, a progressive society, if it's a racist society. Similarly, we can't imagine a society that's a progressive society if it's a sexist society, if it oppresses women, if it has violence against women.
We're talking with Iris Morales. She is one of the women who helped to form and steer the Young Lords, that was a nationalist group thriving in the late 1960s through the mid-1970s of Puerto Rican radicals with a strongly progressive agenda, partially guided by the women who were part of its leadership. Well, it is really very forward-thinking. Some of these ideas about employer-provided childcare, compensation for housework, learning and teaching history of the Puerto Rican identity to help fortify a sense of where they wanted to go in the future. And this also, part of their demands to the male leadership was to include LGBT men and women to participate and to join the Young Lords. How did that go over?
As we challenged the traditional machismo and traditional roles, it did open the door for LGBT members to enter the organization. And this would not have been possible within a militaristic, macho organization. It was just not going to happen. And LGBT members participated as organizers and educated in all of the organization's work. And they also formed a caucus, a gay caucus. The Central Committee acknowledged by this time the demands of women were well underway, and we had made many gains. We had asked for the promotion of women to leadership positions and had gained women in Central Committee and other levels of the organization. We had asked for childcare. We had asked for a number of things that opened the door. However, the Central Committee acknowledged that the idea of equality with gays was less acceptable to the community than even equality with women, and went on to publish a groundbreaking statement written by a male Central Committee member, which said that the gay liberation struggle showed the way to become complete human beings rather than half people that was produced by gender roles. Now, that was really a stunning statement, especially for the Young Lords to make, who were in the public imagination so macho. So this idea that we were half people because once one gender was assigned a set of traits and another gender was assigned a different set of traits, and so the gay liberation movement was teaching us how to be whole. So that was a very progressive statement at the time, although there were limitations to how far the struggle for LGBT issues went on in the organization. I don't want to represent it as that it was where it is today. It was not. For example, there were no campaigns specific to advancing LGBT issues.
We know that the movement was, like other nationalist movements, targeted by the FBI, by COINTELPRO. There was a lot tearing at its existence. And eventually, it did deteriorate. The women who are part of it are part of the reason that you wrote this book. You wanted to reach back to them and capture their memories as they were fading. But I couldn't help but wonder, when reading it, whether you are writing a history or a call to action, maybe for the present and the future?
Well, for me, history is a continuum. So it's both. I think we have to document our histories in order to understand where we are and where we're going. For an oppressed people, particularly, our histories are not taught in the institutions where we could find them. So this book is a documentation of the past, but also some to try and present some of the lessons for the present and for a very difficult and dangerous present. The role of the FBI and the police was major in the downfall of the social movements. It was not the only factor, but it was a critical factor. And we don't really know the extent of all the tactics and actions that the FBI and the New York City police took. As a matter of fact, it was only last year in 2016 that the New York Police Department announced that they had found more than 500 boxes of political surveillance files of the 1960s and 70s movements. There were other mistakes that were made that I think would be critical for today. And one was the understanding the hierarchical structure of the Young Lords and how decision-making was controlled by a few leading members. And the lack of democracy in an organization is poison. And lastly, for Puerto Ricans, the Young Lords had an incorrect assessment about the role of Puerto Ricans in the United States to the struggle for the independence of Puerto Rico and made serious mistakes by opening branches in Puerto Rico. Obviously, the colonialism of Puerto Rico continues and the relationship between Puerto Ricans in the United States and Puerto Rico continues. And we need to offer support to those struggles and understand some of the mistakes that activists in the past have made.
Well, Iris, thank you very much for speaking with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Iris Morales, she's an educator, she's a community activist, attorney, and author of the book Through the Eyes of Rebel Women, The Young Lords, 1969 through 1976. There's more on the book at our website, wordofmouthradio.org.